You know, we have a very complex environment here in this state, well, actually across the country and across the world for that matter. One of the crucial elements of our environment are our wetlands. They're very crucial to our ecosystems, and we're lucky to have a great organization like the Wisconsin Wetlands Association working to educate the public, let us know what we can do to protect our wetlands and why we need to protect our wetlands. Katie Belfast has been with us a number of times. She's the outreach program director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. With us today to talk about wetlands. This is Wetlands Month, and so it's great to have her along. You may have some questions. Do you have wetlands in your area? I bet you do. Are you aware of them? Know how to protect them? What's your favorite way to enjoy our state's beautiful wetlands? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Post a question, comment. Maybe you've got a nice photo, wetland photo. We'd love to see that as well. Katie, welcome back.
Great to be here, Larry. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. You and I have talked about wetlands many times on the show, and probably every time I've had you on the show, I've asked you to define wetlands.
Well, that's good because it's an important thing for folks to understand at the baseline because there's been a lot of misconceptions about that. So wetlands are defined by three factors. One is the kind of soil that underlies the wetland. One is whether there's water at or near the surface of the ground for at least part of the year. And one is the kind of plants that grow in there, a specialized group of plants that can put up with wet feet, so to speak, live in conditions that might challenge other plants.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be water there.
No, sir. In fact, some of our most important wetlands, particularly for waterfowl and amphibian species, are what we call ephemeral ponds or seasonal basins, where they're only full at this time of year between now and sort of midsummer. And by the fall, those things can mostly are dry as a bone. But because they're wet at this really critical springtime, they serve a key function for a lot of interesting species.
And what's the key function there, sir? Or probably a whole host of them.
Sure. Well, for example, for amphibians, for frogs and salamanders, many of those live in upland habitats, but they require wetlands and water for their reproductive phase of their life. So we don't get little frog babies unless we have wetlands. And there's been a lot of great work studying what the relationship between those uplands and wetlands needs to be in order to provide the right habitat. And so keeping that connectivity is also really important. Salamanders are another group of species. And one really cool fact I learned about ephemeral ponds that I didn't know is that because they're some of the only open water early in the year, they warm up a lot earlier because the water's really shallow, and often it's groundwatery stuff or melts. A lot of water birds fly through and feed in those areas, feed on little tiny crustaceans that you and I can't see but that are in there. And the calcium and that feed then helps those birds make eggs and when they go to reproduce. So without that little stop on their life path, we wouldn't have wildlife, waterfowl rather.
So they're very important to...
Super important, and I would guess that ephemeral ponds are some of the most under-mapped and under-recognized wetlands on our landscape because they're so temporary and because often they're in the midst of a woodland or another upland community. But super important. And there's been some great work recently. There's a Wisconsin Ephemeral Pond Project that's been working really hard and engaging citizen monitors to come and help identify and find and map those areas. So it's super work that offers an opportunity for the public to get involved in as well.
And we've lost a lot of wetland over the years.
We have. And, you know, Wisconsin fares better than some of our neighbors like Illinois. That's lost a lot more than we have. But still, we've lost more than half of our wetlands from pre-settlement times, and that has a big impact on the many services that wetlands can provide, like flood protection and water cleansing and water absorption, groundwater recharge, a bunch of issues that our state is struggling with on a number of fronts right now. So it's really a key time that we make sure we know what we're doing and keep what we've got and try to restore some of what we've lost.
Katie Belfast, our guest today, Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Great to have her along. Join in with your questions or comments or concerns at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments or post up on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to have you do that. If you got a great wetland photo, I'd love to see that. And email as well at talk@wpr.org. We've lost a lot of our wetlands. Well, how much We have an idea of how many thousands of acres are in wetlands?
Millions. 5 million acres, but that's half of what it was. A lot of that's up north, but a significant portion of the loss has happened in the south because that's where we've done more agricultural development as well as human, you know, cities and towns and villages development. So that's our northern resources are generally speaking in better shape, although they face other risks up there.
Yeah, and I suppose here with building.
Yep, certainly.
Roads,
housing developments, you name it. And we're getting much better at that because more communities are recognizing that they actually increase their problems when they build on wetlands. People who have constructed homes and towns in floodplains, for example, along our river systems. Obviously, we do get our 100-year floods more than every 100 years these days. So we are recognizing that it needs to be a very important part of community planning to protect the wetlands that we still have in communities and to restore some wetlands that may have been lost historically.
Tom in Green Bay has a comment. Tom, hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for having the Top Gun. I love wetlands. I've never seen one I didn't like.
Good.
I have a question, though. Like in Illinois and now the new Wisconsin mining bill, if they destroy a wetland and creating a mine or a road in Illinois, they can build 1.5 acres or something to replace that. But it doesn't even have to be in the same watershed. Do those work as well, and do they have the same impact?
Tom, that's an excellent question, and thank you for bringing it up. And I will defer, certainly, that my colleagues that I work with are more up to the mining legislation than I am in terms of its details, but I'll just say in general, the concept that you're talking about is wetland mitigation, where you can damage or destroy or fill a wetland in one area and replace it by constructing a wetland in another area. Certainly, that's better than not doing mitigation. But as you point out really correctly, when there's no restriction about where that recreated wetland goes, that can be a really big problem. Wetlands provide these ecological services, natural benefits like flood protection and water cleansing. And if you have that in watershed A and you fill it and then you go into watershed B and replace it over there or a quote unquote replace it over there, that community A still has lost those resources that you've filled. And so it does not compensate in that way. And that is a big problem with mitigation. We also are still learning how to restore wetlands. And there are certain kinds that I don't think I know can be replaced. I mean, I'd love to find somebody who can tell me they can do a coniferous bog, because a lot of the conditions for some of our more rare types, really Mother Nature needed to set those up over years and millennia of change and geologic change in our state. So it's a challenge, and we need to improve our wetland restoration science, but we need to keep the wetlands that we have first. That's most important.
Thanks very much for calling, Tom. Appreciate it. Steve in Trevor, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, I have a phone.
Just getting out of the car. Hey, I have 8 acres in Trevor here, and I've tried contact with several people about coming out and eyeballing with trees and whatever, but the other day I saw a Blanding's turtle crossing my property.
Wow.
And, no kidding. And the few agencies I've called really haven't been that much help.
So what are you looking for in the way of help, Steve?
Looking for an expert to come in and say, hey, these trees need to go. Maybe we should plant this type of plant. But I've contacted my local county extension lady, and she can't come out because she doesn't do that.
Sure. Well, let me let you know about a resource that we have recently developed and we hope to be expanding in the coming years. And I'll preface that answer by saying that 75% of Wisconsin's remaining wetlands are in private ownership. So private landowners like you, Steve, are super important to maintaining the wetlands that we have in Wisconsin. And so we've developed a webpage called My Healthy Wetlands. And if you visit our website at wisconsinwetlands.org, you'll see a link to it right there from our homepage. But it's a clearinghouse of resources that we have found to date that we think will be helpful to private landowners. There's publications, there's websites with information, there's links to state and federal programs that support landowners. It's the best that we can do right now as we develop our private landowner outreach program. We are looking to develop that in the coming years and work with our partners to make sure that we can better answer questions of people like you who want to do the best for their wetlands and really need somebody to come and help and advise them on that.
Yeah.
Right. Not all wetlands It's like I've probably had five different types of warblers in the last 2 or 3 mm-hmm. days.
It's a great time of year for warblers.
Yeah. It's an awesome. I get all kinds of different creatures rolling through. You said that was WisconsinWetlands.org?
Yep.
Yep.
Are there any phone numbers associated with that? I'd like to talk to people. I don't like the computer process.
Well, you're welcome to call our office, and we can help you out there. That's 608-250-9971.
9971. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And we also have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So if you want to go there, too, just link right into the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Happy to help out in that way. And May is, it's Wetlands Month. What's the background on that, by the way?
It is American Wetlands Month, and I think we're in our 21st year. It's a program that was started by the EPA to just try to raise awareness in May when lots of wetlands around the country are coming to life after the winter sort of period of hibernation. So it's a very exciting time to get out. There's all the frogs are calling. As Steve pointed out, the warblers are warbling, and cranes are back in the state and making their beautiful calls. So it's a very nice time to call attention to that. And we try to do extra outreach every year during American Wetlands Month. This year we have a special sort of campaign on our Facebook page where we're sharing all the many reasons that we love our wetlands. They provide great places to play. They protect communities from flooding. And we want to hear from our audience here about what you love about your wetlands. So we welcome you to join us not only on Larry's Facebook page, but come on over to Wisconsin Wetlands page and share your wetland loves there with us as well.
And it'd be fun to even hear from you today about that. If you've got a favorite wetland of mm-hmm. your own you want to talk about, I would certainly welcome your calls at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can give us a call. We'd be happy to hear what you have to say about the wetlands that you like, or maybe the issues that you might have relating to wetlands. Katie Balfas, our guest today, she is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. How long has the Wetlands Association been in existence?
30+ years.
30+ years. We'll talk with her a little bit more about that and take your questions right after this look at the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There are many, many types of wetlands. Some would include marshes or bogs or swamps, fens. These are all wetlands. They all have different characteristics, but they're also have some important things in common because they provide habitat for a wide variety of plants and animals. They serve as water cleaning systems, among other things. Larry Mueller here. I love to talk about our wetlands, and there's no one better to talk about it with us than Katie Balfas. She is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And Katie, thanks again for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Always fun.
We have questions and comments coming in. You can call in with your question or comment. What do you think about our wetlands? You have a question about a specific wetland in your area or maybe one that is part of your property? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Email from Gail in Milwaukee, who says there's an ephemeral pond project currently underway at the Ware Nature Center. That's just west down College Avenue from Berner Botanical Gardens. Not a lot of people know about Ware, but it serves Milwaukee County residents as part of the Milwaukee Parks system. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, Gail is a great member of our organization, if she's the Gail that I'm thinking she might be, and she's been involved with the Ephemeral Ponds Project that I mentioned earlier. So this is one specific location where your listeners could get involved at the Ware Nature Center, and there's other facilities as well. Wisconsin Ephemeral Pond Project is the name of that group. I think they have a website you can Google for more information.
And that's that nature center is really worth seeing, isn't it?
You know, I haven't been there, and there's so many wonderful nature centers out there that are connecting with communities. I'd love to make a little point to get out to more of them.
It's a beautiful, beautiful spot. We have an email from Tad in Ontario, Wisconsin, who says, I'd like to restore some wetland in one of our fields. I think it was historically a wetland, but it has since gone to grass. Are there resources available to help me restore this piece of land?
Great question, Tad. And we, I'm so happy to say, have a resource for you. We have a Wisconsin wetland restoration handbook for Wisconsin landowners that some folks from our organization developed many years ago, so but the information is still highly relevant. And we can get that to you if you give our office a call at 608-250-9971. And also, if you're a more internet-inclined person, we have parts of it on our website, and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources also has it available as a PDF if that's a more convenient way. But all that information is available on our website if you want to come visit us at wisconsinwetlands.org. So that'll walk him through the steps of how to read the landscape to figure out if he did have a former wetland, what the soil types are, what the, whether there might be drain tiles, and walk him through the steps of how he might go about doing a restoration if he does have a former wetland property.
And if you're on my Facebook page, you can just click. We've got a link right there to the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, so you can just go right ahead and do that. Jim in Castle Rock. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there. I'm a retired individual, and I've had the privilege of, at my choice, of working on a cranberry forage for a few years. And I went there with a jaundiced eye as to what they were doing to our water. And whatever they're doing on this marsh really works. I've never seen so damn many frogs in my life.
Hmm.
Well, that's, yeah, it's an interesting thing. Cranberries are a wonderful product in Wisconsin. They're important for our economy, and they're a natural product from our wetlands. There are some concerns about the cranberry industry, but different companies always do things differently. And Mike, kudos to companies that are using, wetlands for cranberry production in responsible ways. So I don't know that's a particular story, but I encourage folks, but certainly support that kind of effort to keep a nature balance with our production of cranberries.
Jim, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Tony and DePere, on to you. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'm just calling about the blastomycosis. I was just kind of wondering if there's been any cases in the recent years or, where you might want to be aware of it.
Blastomycosis in wetlands.
I'm afraid I'm speechless on that one, Larry. I'm going to have to do some research on that one, unless he... Tony, can you give me some more information?
Well, I know a lot of people have been getting it in their dogs. Their pets have been getting it, and been getting real sick when they go in areas, where there's wetlands. And I think Clintonville area had quite a few areas where they were getting it there.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to do some research on that. But in a broader response to that question, I can't answer that specific question, but the broader response is that a lot of... the healthier the wetland in general, the fewer pests we see coming out of it. Mosquitoes are more likely to come out of unhealthy wetlands and sort of stagnant water areas than they are in a healthy wetland system where you've got a lot of predators that are going to eat those bugs and mosquitoes. And when you've got the systems for processing water, Larry, you mentioned that wetlands are good for cleaning water. When you've got that vegetation that can uptake some of those problematic chemicals and things, generally the water is cleaner. And so, with healthy, intact wetlands. So I'll have to look into this particular case.
I suffered from that about 12, 13 years ago. It wasn't in relationship to a wetland, but blastomycosis is not a fun thing to have.
It doesn't sound good.
For sure. Tony, thank you. Paul in Washington County, hello to you.
Yes, I have a property where a neighbor has modified his land and putting in an undersized culvert by probably, I don't know what his rationale was. In any case, it created about an acre and a half of wetland on my property, and this has been over about 5 years. And I have some airborne and bird brought in wetland seeds, and I've been told now that's off limits for any other activity. So this is a material loss for me because it affected the additional acreage. What recourse do I have? I mean, he has altered the normal water flow, causing a loss to me. Can that be litigated, or can I just ignore, or can I be penalized with the DNR if I do other activities on that land?
Well, I am not an attorney, so I can't comment on that, you know, the legalities of your situation, but certainly it's not okay in a general sense for one landowner to do something that would have a negative impact on the adjacent landowner in terms of water going over the property line. And that comes up a lot where we do have landowners who want to do restoration projects and the neighbors are concerned about what the impacts of that and care always has to be taken to make sure that water doesn't back up onto somebody else's land unless they want it there. So it sounds like your neighbor did something he wasn't supposed to be doing, and that's where you need to go. The delineation of the wetland on your property wouldn't come just from where the water is, but it would be an assessment of, as I said at the top of the show, we looked at the soil. You know, a wetland delineator would look at soils and where the soil transition is between upland soils and wetland soils. And it may be, I don't know your situation, it may be that you had a drained wetland previously. Now it's wet because this guy put in the culvert, so that your situation hasn't actually changed if you had the wetland to begin with, but you just know about it now. And so I don't know. I would contact the Department of Natural Resources, contact your local county water management specialist. You can type water management specialist on the DNR website search page to find out who that local person is, and he or she can contact you with the appropriate officials. But your landowner neighbor needs to address the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I would take Katie's advice. I would also think in terms of an attorney, too. You might need an attorney for this. You know,
good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Terry in Green Bay, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good afternoon. I'd just like to ask your guest, with wetlands, my first comment, it seems like if you got enough money, you can build anywhere, wetlands or not. Okay? My next question, I have a question. How did that big store that's being built in Green Bay by Cabela's, how did that go through when that's right on wetlands?
Well, I'm on your side here, and Wisconsin Wetlands Association spent a lot of time and effort fighting the decision to issue the permit for that site, and we lost. We took the case. We took it to a contested case hearing. Well, but that was our goal. It didn't happen because there was a special legislative package that was passed for that particular site. I'm of the opinion, personally and professionally, that we all need to follow the same rules. If there's a rule, that everybody needs to follow it, and it doesn't matter how much money you have or not. There are cases where the economic development that something like a Cabela's can bring in, you know, there's an important thing to gain there, and so communities have to make that cost-benefit examination. However, one piece that's missing from the cost-benefit analyses most of the time are the actual financial benefits of maintaining natural systems, including wetlands, because of the services they provide our communities. And that's not something that our communities are, for the most part, doing. We do these cost-benefit analyses, and the only benefits that are considered from a dollar value are the economic revenues that can come in from a development project, and they're not talking about how much are we going to have to spend on building infrastructure to manage water, how much are we going to spend on infrastructure to manage water quality, to clean water, you know, how are we going to build parks and natural areas for our community, for the quality of life that our community wants to have. When you lose natural systems, you lose all of those economic benefits as well, even if you get a big, nice store. So I couldn't agree with you more. Everybody should have to follow the same rules, and we shouldn't build on wetlands and wherever we can avoid it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Terry, for calling. And Jeff in Fond du Lac, moving to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I just wondering if you know anything about the Supley Market area, what DNR might be doing to eradicate Phragmites in that along Highway 45.
I don't know the specific site, but I know that DNR has been doing a lot of work in the Green Bay area and along Door County Peninsula to control Phragmites. Phragmites, or giant reed, is a rapidly spreading, very, very aggressive, tall wetland invasive species that has really come on strong, particularly around Green Bay, but it's spreading, you know, everywhere, much to everybody's chagrin. So the DNR has been taking that very seriously and doing some control work, but it will take a village, as they say, to keep this thing from. The most important thing is to repair the hydrology in these sites, and that's sometimes the hardest to do when you're in an urban area. But often invasive species are kind of like a scab. There's something that is indicating that the system is generally not healthy, and that's why these invasives are able to easily invade and take over. And if we can get the hydrology right, the natives have a better chance.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Katie Balfus, our guest today, Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. You may have a question. I hope you'll join in or a comment at 1-800-642-1234. Talking with her about wetlands during, this is American Wetlands Month, as a matter of fact. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. And Melissa in Baraboo, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me. Katie, I'd like you to expand on the Cabela's site. And I know one of the big defenses that people who were in support of the Cabela's building said was that, you know, they were going to be creating the 1.5 times as many wetlands as they were going to be destroying, and how that was going to solve the problem. And I would just like you to touch on mitigation and how that's a little different than a natural wetland.
Yeah, that's, well, we talked a little bit about it before, but we can touch base again. So mitigation is where, as Melissa said, when one wetland site is going to be affected or filled or built upon, another wetland is created somewhere else to allegedly offset the impacts of the fill. That is true that in the case of the Cabela's development, they are mitigating and they are providing funds for other wetland restoration projects in the area. It doesn't make up for the fact that the services at that site are gone. They're now underneath the store. And so mitigation is, in my opinion, first we need to avoid wetlands and try to build somewhere else. Then we need to figure out ways to minimize what we do build on wetlands, you know, by changing site designs and whatnot. And mitigation should be the last resort. So I don't know if that answers your question, Melissa, but it's certainly... It's unfortunately, it's where we're headed because it sounds good. A lot of politicians like the idea that you can destroy one place and create somewhere else, and then look, we have no net loss. But we do have all that loss because we have lost those original natural functioning systems in the places where they developed.
Hmm.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. Tanya in Exeland, Wisconsin. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you for calling.
Good, thanks. We had bought piece of wetland, basically it's 40 acres, and we bought it back last year, and the owners before had a gray water system, and they didn't care what was being put down the drain, basically. And when we moved in, we noticed there was no wildlife, and we quickly went to, you know, biodegradable stuff until we could get it converted over the piping and stuff. And so I'm wondering how long it takes, or if you know any information that we could do to basically clear out the phosphates and the chemicals that may have been there.
Well, that is a really good question and gets a little bit out of my comfort zone because of the specificity of the situation. I commend you for switching your products and, you know, making sure that you're at least not contributing further to the problem. That, I think, is a really important first step. And there's still research being done. Actually, Joy Zedler here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Arboretum is doing some really interesting research on phosphorus and various other nutrient uptakes in wetlands and is learning some really interesting things about what they're doing that might help you in the long run, but she's in the midst of it right now, so it doesn't help you in your situation. I would say time is probably important. If you don't see some changes, in the next year or two, and even before then, you might want to invite somebody out to make sure that there aren't other hydrologic alterations that are affecting the quality of the wetland that you have, because that might be the source, but we should just rule out other sources too to make sure that you've addressed what the problem is.
Yep.
Great. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Yes, thanks for calling. Gibbs in Dane County, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've got two stories about the swamp fighting back. Okay.
All right.
First one is in the 1940s, early 40s, mid-40s. They were building a highway through McNaughton, Wisconsin. And when the contractors finished building the road, they contacted the police to have them inspect it, and then they could remove the barricade. By the time the police officer got there, the swamp had burped and literally swallowed the road.
Well, one of the reasons we still have some of the wetlands that we do have is that they are not your ideal building sites. And we've learned that this happens. You know, nature has its ways and we should not build through wetlands. That is pretty funny, though, that it would happen so quickly. I love that she said burped. That's too funny.
Yeah, that's a great story. And I've got other callers online because I want to give others a chance to get in. So I thank you for that call and that comment. Ray in Coloma, I'll give you a chance. Hey, Ray.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a trout stream biologist, and I'm very concerned with the health of riparian parts of the ecosystem along our streams. And to my mind, these are largely wetlands. I think they must have a lot of the same soils and so on. And I just like your guest to comment on what her association has to do with riparian wetlands and urge them to be paying a lot of attention to the health of riparian systems along streams.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for the call, Ray. And we couldn't agree with you more that wetlands and rivers and streams and lakes, for that matter, are intimately interrelated. And we call them those different things. And as people, we think of them as different things. But it's all part of one natural water system. And we can't really look at one without looking and thinking about the other. So absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more. And I'll just say then maybe Larry and I can talk about this on another show, but our 2014 Wetlands Conference in February next year will be in La Crosse. And while we haven't finalized the theme, it will for sure talk about the relationships between rivers and wetlands based on the fact that we'll be in the lovely La Crosse on the Mississippi River.
Oh,
so.
Sure. Ray, thank you.
You bet.
Appreciate your call. I'm starting to run out of time here a little bit, but what are some of the biggest challenges right now worldwide, maybe in U.S., Wisconsin?
Sure, also? Sure. Invasive species are a growing concern, and as we talk and think more about the impacts of climate change and what that's doing, that becomes, I think, a bigger concern. We're not sure how our climate will change as a result of changing climates. Or how that's going to affect our wetlands. And some people say they might get drier. Some people they might get wetter. It depends because we don't know. It's extremes is what we're talking about. So that's certainly invasive species is a very big problem. Development continues to be a big problem, not only actually the filling of wetlands, but as some of the callers said earlier, you know, when you build through them, you change hydrology, you alter the way that water flows, and that causes a lot of other problems. So making sure that our communities are paying attention to that. So I guess I'd call those two of the biggest issues that we need to talk about and think about.
And here we are during American Wetlands Month, and you folks have some activities and things going on.
We do. We have our Facebook campaign right now, so join us there. And we also host our own field trips and also collaborate with our partners to promote other wetland field trips and events. And so if you visit our wetlands calendar on our Wisconsin Wetlands Association website, you'll see a whole list, huge list of events, and many of them upcoming in the month of May, including this week right here in Madison or up at Crex Meadows or down in Kenosha. We publish a statewide list of events.
And give an example of one type of event.
An example of a type of event. Let's see. This weekend, there's going to be a Mother's Day ephemeral brunch and spring wildflower walk at Pringle Nature Center. So another great mm-hmm. nature center that's down in Kenosha County. And there's some stuff here on the 8th. That's today. So tonight, if you want to get out, there's a warbler walk and an evening at Cherokee Marsh Walk right here in Madison, which is also one of our Wisconsin wetland gems.
Yeah, Cherokee Marsh, what
it's a beautiful place. My kids love to frog there.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yep.
And the turtles.
And the cranes.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's a wonderful place. And sort of a gem that I'm not so sure that even people who live in Madison know anything about.
No, and we've got some resources to help educate people about what a wonderful gem we have right here in Madison. So
thumbs up for that. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it very much. Katie Balfus, Outreach Program Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. It's wisconsinwetlands.org is the place to go. We have a link to it on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. If you happen to be on the page, just click there and you'll get right to it. Find out about some more of those activities that are going on. Tomorrow, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and Jen Wojcik of the Habitat Restore in Madison are guests to talk about reusing building materials to save money and the environment. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.